This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Two local educators went on adventures of a lifetime last year when they were picked to be Lindblad Expeditions and National Geographic Education Grosvenor Teacher Fellows. They and 33 other fellows journeyed to places all over the world for hands-on experience and professional development. Donetta Hayes, who teaches at the School for Creative and Performing Arts, traveled to the British and Irish Isles aboard the National Geographic Explorer ship. Shasta Bray, interpretive media manager with the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, traveled on the National Geographic Endeavor to the Galapagos Islands. And Donetta and Shasta are here to share their experiences and tell us how they're using what they learned on their expeditions to teach others. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Donetta and Shasta, thank you so much for coming in today. It's good to see both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Shasta, how did you get picked for these trips in the first place? How did that happen?
Yeah, there was a whole application process, and they're actually undergoing that process right now for the next year's fellows. But it started with learning about the opportunity online, so on the National Geographic website, and then looking at the eligibility and the requirements for it. And we had to write essay questions and answer certain questions to show how we incorporate geographic education into what we do as teachers, or in my case, as an informal educator. And so you send those applications in to National Geographic, and they go through a whole process of review and going through all the applications, so that then by February, I believe it was, as when we got the calls to say that we were selected as one of the fellows for the upcoming year.
Donetta, is there a lot of competition for these trips?
There's a lot of competition. Actually, last year there were 2,700 teachers who applied. It was actually 35 teachers that were chosen. I think the year before there were about 1,300 applicants. So every year, the number of people who are applying for this professional development opportunity, it's increasing.
Now, when you got the notification, they called you by phone. Is that how it worked? How did you react when you got that phone call?
I was actually driving back from Perfect North Slopes, and I had received a text, well, not a text, but a phone call message from Washington, D.C. And I didn't answer it immediately, and I listened to my voicemail message, and it said, hi, this is, I can't remember the guy's name, but I'm from National Geographic. I'm calling to let you know that you have been selected as a Grosvenor Teacher Fellow. And I hung up the phone and I said, is this the call that I've been waiting on?
Or was this a joke?
I had to listen to it twice, and here I am stuck in traffic, leaving Perfect North, and I'm screaming in my car because I could not believe it. So of course I called back immediately the number, and that's how I found out my news. At least we all have different stories. You'd be amazed at everyone's story, how they found out and how they reacted, but it was definitely a pleasant surprise and a great opportunity. It was an amazing experience. Yeah.
What about you, Shasta? How did you find out? What was your reaction when you got that call?
Just really excited. It was funny because I was grocery shopping, and I saw the Washington, D.C. number come up on my phone, and I didn't answer. I just assumed it was a telemarketer or somebody, and I put it back in my pocket. They called back again, and I was like, wow, this is a really persistent person here. Why are they keep calling me? So it wasn't until I got to the car with my groceries and listened to the voicemail when I was kicking myself for not picking up the phone. But then, you know, I was able to call back right away, and I think my ice cream melted, and I was just very, very excited and grateful to be chosen.
Shasta, tell me about where you went. You went to the Galapagos Islands?
I did, yes. So it was a 7-day expedition on the National Geographic Endeavor. And we did a tour of the Western Islands in the Galapagos. So we spent...
And for those who don't know where those, that's in the Pacific, right?
So it's 600 miles off the coast of Ecuador. So it's part of Ecuador, but it's pretty far off the coast, and they're volcanic islands, so they were never attached to the mainland. They came up right from, you know, from the sea, so they're very, very unique, very diverse islands. Each island itself has its own sort of ecosystem and complement of how it came to be geologically, and then how, you know, how did animals first get there? You know, was it by sea or birds? And so each one kind of has its own whole world in and of itself. Very unique.
How rich is the wildlife there?
Oh, it's amazing. I didn't actually look up. I don't recall in my brain how many different species there are, but there's a lot of different variety and diversity. And I think it's the 40% about of the species that are there are endemic to the Galapagos. So it's the only place in the world that they're found. So they have a lot of unique species that you're not going to find anywhere else. And what's really amazing about that area is that you've got currents coming from the south and from the north and from the east, all sort of combining there, creating such unique conditions that you've got tropical species like sea turtles swimming in the same waters as Galapagos penguins, which we think of, you know, penguins as
what an interesting
being
mix.
A cold weather
yes.
place. So just a lot of diversity and you know, strange things.
Strange combinations.
Yes, yeah.
Turtles and penguins.
Right.
Now, you were on the National Geographic Endeavor, right?
Mm-hmm,
what was that ship like?
Oh, it was amazing. This was the first time I've been traveling in that way, you know, on a ship. It's a 96-passenger ship. So people tell me that's pretty small and intimate. I've never been on one of those, you know, huge cruise ships. But to me, it certainly felt big. You can get lost on those ships. So you kind of have to get your bearings when you first get there. But it was super nice. Great, you know, little cabins and huge dining room area. They have a library on board. I mean, they just sort of think about every need and every opportunity. And the staff was amazing.
Now, Donetta, you journeyed to the British and Irish Isles, right? So what was that like for you?
It was a very different trip than what Shasta experienced. I went to, the British and Irish Isles consist of England, Ireland, and Scotland.
So you're up in the North Atlantic.
Yes, very,
she's
very,
someplace warm, you're
very
someplace, right?
Cold.
Yes, different,
okay.
different,
it was
different climate.
Incredibly cold in May of all times. But I want to just preface that these were both maritime expeditions. So we're on this ship, as you already noted, you know, for a period of time. My expedition was 15 days, and we weren't really on the mainland. We actually traveled around, Shasta and myself, to different islands. So I had a chance to go to the Shetlands, to Foy, the Isles of Scilly, the Fair Isle, the Orkney Islands, St. Kilda, Iona and Staffa Islands, the Skelligs. You know, we're constantly moving from place to place on this professional development experience. And, you know, we're disembarking, going out with a team of naturalists. I think, honestly, that was one of the highlights of my experience, was working with the National Geographic's team and the Lindblad expedition team. They are absolutely amazing. And to have this opportunity to go out into the field and study with them, you know, I was telling Shasta, I had an opportunity to work with Jim Richardson, who's a National Geographic photographer, Jim Kelly, who's a geologist, Vinnie Butler, an archaeologist. I had an ethnomusicologist on my ship, Peter Wilson, Eric Goose, who was the most amazing mentor that anyone could have on an expedition of this magnitude. So when you have a chance to go out and explore these archaeological sites, because my expedition, actually, there was a heavy emphasis on archaeology and history, even though science was a large component of it as well, I probably visited over 20 different sites that in my lifetime I would have never had an opportunity to visit.
So they have specific experiments and projects that they do when you're on these trips?
It's not so much projects as it is leaving the ship and going out and studying something. They actually give you every morning on your door, they leave an itinerary. And they give you about 2, maybe 3 options for the morning and 2 and 3 options for the afternoon for you to pick what interests you the most. And so I went with a lady by the name of Paola Pasodan, who went with me on my expedition. And so Paola would say, well, I'll go here and I'll go here. And then we would come back in the evening time and share our notes, share our photographs, to make sure that we both walked away with that knowledge to take back and incorporate into our classrooms, because we both wanted to see everything, but it's just impossible at times.
And what about the ship itself? You're on the National Geographic Explorer.
Yes.
What was it like?
Oh, it's incredible. It's, you know, similar to Shasta. It's a passenger ship expedition. I don't know what to say about it aside from it. It's,
I think the Explorer is a bit larger than the Endeavor.
It is. It's a little bit larger, but about 130 to 50 passengers. But it's very comfortable. Like she said, the dining room, the lounge area, honestly, that was an amazing place to sit and talk to some of the guests, the other travelers that were aboard the ship. It was also an opportunity to interact with the naturalists, the archaeologists on board, to ask those in-depth questions. My favorite time on the ship was actually the evening recap, right before dinner, where we would have an opportunity. They would, the naturalists or the geologists or the historians, they would present something from the day, almost as an extension of what you already learned. And, you know, you have an opportunity to take even more notes and take those, that information back into the classroom and apply it. So it was an incredible opportunity. The observation deck, mm-hmm. everything on the ship is designed to make you feel comfortable, but also to give you an opportunity to learn more about the environment. The ship provides everything that you need, particularly as an educator, from laptops and computers. You know, we had cameras, we had a GoPro camera, mm-hmm. We had a Google Theta on board. So I really applaud National Geographic and Lindblad Expeditions.
Sounds like it lived up to your expectations.
Oh, beyond our expectations.
Definitely.
Because it provided everything that we need as educators to go out into a field and really study this environment that we were going to be in.
Donetta, how are you going to use this at the zoo? Or Shasta,
yes,
sorry. Shasta, how are you going to use what you learned at the zoo?
Yeah, you know, I think all of the experiences and the, you know, incredible opportunities that I had to really learn about that place and what's going on there was so amazing and personally very fulfilling. But then, you know, how to bring that back, right? And how to integrate that into what we're doing professionally. And so my role at the zoo is really to sort of develop those experiences that guests have when they come. You know, we don't want an experience where people just come and you move from here to here and you're looking at animals and that's it. You know, we want people to engage, to interact, to feel emotionally inspired. And so one of the things that I was able to do while I was in the Galapagos was visit the giant tortoise, the Darwin Breeding Center. And we got to go out and sort of come. It was funny, you pulled the bus up into this field and the tortoises just look like Easter eggs kind of scattered in this field and all very evenly distributed. And they're all just sort of munching on grass and paying no mind to us. And, you know, it was like kids in a candy store. You get to just go out into this field and explore and take pictures. And, you know, they would let you know if you got too close, they would kind of hiss. But I mean, what more is it going to do? It's a giant tortoise. And so learning all about sort of the history of, you know, why these tortoises are in trouble. Many of them, their populations were decimated from hunters that would take them on their ships. You know, they'd have fresh meat for however long because they can go months without eating or drinking. A lot of them introduce predators, rats and things that have gotten onto the islands. You know, they would eat their eggs, so they're having trouble breeding and replenishing. So they're doing a lot of great work to restore the habitats and the ecosystems there and bring back, you know, some of those populations. And especially with the tortoises, that has been a really big success for them. So we have Galapagos tortoises at the zoo, and we have this great little exhibit where folks can come and at certain times of the day, we'll have facilitated experiences where they can actually come into the exhibit and sort of meet the tortoises, you know, face to face and touch the shell and see what that's like. And my goal is to really take that experience a step further. So not only are we inspiring you by giving you that intimate experience, but, you know, telling you more about the story and the history and why this is important and what people can do to sort of both globally and locally have an impact.
Donetta and Shasta, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Sure.
Thank you.
Donetta Hayes, who teaches at the School for Creative and Performing Arts, and Shasta Bray, interpretive media manager with the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Stephen Baum was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Science Friday is next on 91.7 WVXU. It's been more than 50 years since the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. gave his I Have a Dream speech during the March on Washington. On the next Cincinnati edition, we celebrate the life and work of Dr. King and discuss the state of racial equality in America. We'll also talk with Cincinnati civil rights leader Marion Spencer and the author of her biography, Keep on Fighting. That's Cincinnati edition, Monday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.